following program is closed captioned for the thinking impaired.
It is time for another episode of Chat with a Cat. I believe this is episode 36. If I'm wrong, I'll probably just give it a different name and not worry about it. But it's been a while. We're currently in the 1989-90 season. Just finished up with the conference semifinals. The conference final matchups are set. And I thought now was a good time to start working my way through the teams and doing, I guess, what you could call a bit of a post-mortem on the season, taking a look at some of the teams and how they finished and what I would suggest for those teams. I would point out that what I plan to do here is start with the non-playoff teams, and then we'll work our way through and see, you know, kind of how far we get. And so I'm going to start in the Eastern Conference, and we're going to start with the Knicks. The Knicks have come off a couple of rough seasons. The good news for them is they have their own draft picks, which they haven't had in the past. And so they're getting ready to start building back up. And so anytime that you go into a rebuild, as the Knicks are clearly doing with 15 wins, you want to take stock of where you are, what you have, and what your assets look like going forward, and identify what you're going to keep, what you're going to dump, what players you need to build around. For the Knicks, unfortunately, there's really only two players that they have that I think they should be considering as build around pieces, and those are Dan Majerle and Derek McKee. Now, McKee is kind of an interesting player. I've been kind of keeping an eye on him in that he is a what I would call a perimeter defender with size. He's 6'9", and if you take a look at his ratings, he sees across the board except, I guess, being free throw. I don't think we really care too much about free throw shooting because it's only a difference of maybe a point or two a game for even the best players. But he's got B potentials in perimeter defense and steals as well. Which means he's got the potential to be an excellent perimeter defender. Although I think, you know, right now he's being played at power forward, I think his ideal position is probably at either small forward or shooting guard, which is a little bit odd, perhaps, because the rest of his game isn't really that kind of a game. He's got a very high block shot rate and rebound rate for a shooting guard. He's kind of got a low offensive ceiling for a small forward. But McKee is a piece that perhaps is not a premium piece, but is a what I would call a good enough piece. You don't want him to be your number one or your number two player, but it's fine if he's your fifth starter or your sixth man. He's not going to actively hurt you. So I think, you know, the Knicks can kind of start with that in mind. And then secondarily with Dan Majerle, he's also got an excellent steal rating. He's more of he's not a primary ball handler. He's got a B handles rating. He's more a three-point shooter. He's not a true 3-and-D guy because he doesn't have those high ratings in post-defense or perimeter defense. But he's another guy that's very similar to McKee. He'd make a good fourth or fifth starter. He's not going to be your primary offensive engine. His overall scoring ceiling is a little bit higher than McKee's, although his overall defensive ceiling, I think, is a little bit lower. So what this tells me is the Knicks have two nice defensive-minded complementary pieces, but no real offensive centerpiece around which they should build. And so I think for the Knicks, that's their priority either in free agency or in the draft, is finding an offensive centerpiece around whom they can build. It's likely next season they're going to have Bill Cartwright and his player option on the books, as well as Johnny Moore. There was a lot of effort to move Moore this season, and that didn't happen. Cartwright is kind of an interesting case. He's a player that has made it around the league since leaving Portland, and he's still a passable, although not a great center, but at the age of 32, he's aging out of his ability to be a contributor. So I think if I'm the Knicks, I probably assume that I'm going to have to keep him on his contract next season. He's going to be very difficult to move without attaching value, and I don't know that they want to do that. And the thing about Cartwright is, you know, he's not a part of your young core, but what he is he's another guy that is borderline passable, I guess, defensively. You look at his defensive rebounding and his post defense. His post defense is in decline. His rebounding is in decline. His shot blocking was never great. He's still a decent scorer, but again, he is going to be the stopgap, probably a starter, because in this draft there's no polished ready to go centers. So he's probably a starter for one more year while you try to develop a center behind him. And so what the Knicks are going to be looking for is probably either a primary scorer that they can use to generate offense. They'll be looking for a passing ball handling point guard that they can use to let McKee and Marley get set up. Or they'll be looking for a defensive big man so that they can, I guess, kind of triple down on defense. They've got a couple of guys that are good on the perimeter. Not great, but good. There are no really great perimeter defenders in the league right now. And then if they can add one more big man there, they can try to match up and give some teams some problems. I do think the other issue that the Knicks are going to run into is lack of depth. That's going to take time to build up. So do I see the Knicks making a turnaround immediately? To be honest, I don't. They don't have enough cap space this season to make a big free agent splash, I don't think. Not unless the cap really, really jumps. And they don't have a ton of draft capital outside their own. This year, they should be getting a good pick. You would think if they're still struggling, next year they'll get a good pick. They're hoping probably with the Nets pick to just pick up a player that can make it into their rotation. So the Knicks have a little bit of work cut out for them, but they do have two very nice complementary pieces, and so their priority needs to be going and finding a star. We'll then move over to the Bullets, who I think are a little farther along in their rebuild, simply because I think they have more. They've collected a lot of pieces, and I think they're probably waiting for one or more of them to hit. If I start at the top of their roster with pieces that I would consider future-looking, let's call it, I would start with Cadillac Anderson, who's got one more season on his rookie contract. He's already an excellent rebounder, okay shot blocker. The defense is good, but could use maybe a little more work. The offense is kind of where he's hurting a little bit. I do think if the decision out of Mike Lowry is that Cadillac Anderson is his future, as it were, at the big man position, he's probably worth throwing a potential training into. If it were me, I would probably look at training either inside to turn him into a scoring threat, or maybe that jump shot rating, which you can improve a little bit cheaper, to give him a little more well-rounded offensive game. This season, he's averaging 11 points and about 8 rebounds in 27 minutes a game. I think that can scale up. So if you were to play him, say, 36 minutes a game, he's probably a 15 and 10 guy, which is not a star, but it's certainly a good big, if you will. The next piece that they have is Chris Morris. He's 24, also on a rookie scale deal. Hasn't really done much so far. They're probably hoping that he gets a training camp bump. This is a guy that, again, is kind of average to below average across the board. With a training camp bump, he's probably a low-grade starter. As it is now, he's a piece off the bench, and they're just kind of going to have to wait to see how that goes. They've got Ken Norman. Norman is an interesting player. He was in Washington a couple seasons ago, went to the Hawks. They brought him back. This season, he averaged 14 points and 5 rebounds per game. And he's another guy that, you know, you look at his potentials and it's C's across the board with a couple of B's. But the B's are in important categories. They're in inside, which is your scoring rating, and offensive rebounding, which means when he's on a team that isn't doing great, he's going to go collect extra shots and be able to score for himself. So again, I see Norman as maybe a guy who, with no potential growth, probably tops out at a fourth or fifth starter. But that's not a bad guy to have, especially if you can get him paid appropriately, which right now he is. Then there's Sean Elliott. This is a player that probably should have seen the court this season just so that they can see what he can do. He's very, very raw, and quite frankly, I'm not sure he is as good as the other two players that we've discussed so far. It's hard to tell, obviously, because we haven't seen him on the floor, but his only A-rated potential is his three-point shooting. He's got a B in free throws. Everything else is C's and D's. And that worries me a little bit because we're not really in the era of three-point chucking yet. And so even if a player has a high three-point rating, they're not going to be getting a lot of threes. And so I'm not sure where Sean Elliott's ceiling is. I do like his athletic potentials, but he just seems like a player that, you know, again, he's probably a fifth starter or a sixth man unless he gets a training camp jump. There's Doug West, who's another player that's, you know, a back of the rotation player. They've got John Starks. Now, John Starks is kind of interesting to me in that he's got he's kind of feast or famine. If you look at his perimeter abilities, his shooting, his jump shot, his handles, his passing, his perimeter D, his steals, he's actually one of the better perimeter defenders in the league, and all of those are B potentials. So outside, he's great. Inside, defensive rebounding is a D, post defense, D, block shots, F. So he's going to be kind of a pure perimeter player, so you're going to have to know going in that there will be matchups, especially in this league where there are a lot of even wing players that can pound you down low, that he's going to be at a disadvantage at. The one thing that I do love about him, though, is he does have those Bs in perimeter defense and steals, and they're clearly high Bs since he's already in the 70s there. So I think Starks is probably, at his peak, once he grows into his offense, he's probably your third best player on a championship team. And so that brings us to the last two guys on the roster that I think the Bullets are kind of identifying as potential building blocks. There's Kenny Smith, who has outstanding quickness, and similar to Starks, has a lot of A's in the perimeter and point guard areas, not so great in the interior areas. And so I think Smith, he probably needs some training in his inside slash scoring game to really be effective, but he's going to be a very good pure point guard, which if that's what you're looking for, he's going to do that. I know we have some people that love shooting point guards, scoring point guards. Some teams love just pure point guards, and I think Kenny Smith has the potential to be a pure point guard. The concern I would have if I'm trying to forecast the Bullets roster is both Starks and Smith are completely on the perimeter. They don't really help out inside, so you're going to need some real beef interior-wise in order to make up for that. Finally, they've got Johnny Dawkins, who's going into RFA. He's a 26-year-old point guard. This is another guy who has excellent perimeter game, offensive game inside, defensive game inside, a little bit weak. So the Bullets, they have guys that are good in their specializations, but maybe lack a little bit in all-around game. And so I think for me, the key for the Bullets over the next couple of seasons, if they want to return to contention, is to identify of all of these players. You can't pay all of them. Over the next 3-4 years, they're all going to come up for free agency, and If somebody else is interested, they're going to command a big deal. And then, you know, you can't pay everybody. You have to figure out who you're going to leave, who you're going to keep. But I think on top of figuring out whom to leave and whom to keep, it's figuring out whom to trade them for. And can I get rebounding in there? Or maybe resorting to the free agent market to get some rebounding in there is what the plan is. We know there's a couple of really good rebounders that are starting to get a little long in the tooth, but if all you're asking them to do is rebound, that doesn't necessarily go too quickly. Scoring and drawing fouls tends to go first, then defense and rebounding. Rebounding is one of the last things to go. So maybe someone like a Kurt Rambis is a player that they might be looking at picking up if they want to add to their rebounding. We'll then move on to the 76ers. This is a team that I thought honestly should have been better this season. The combination of Kiki Vandeweghe, Joe Dumars, and Jay Humphries I really like in the backcourt. Kiki is a little bit past his prime, but Humphries and Dumars are both, you know, right at the start of their primes. Sam Perkins, who they have playing at center, he's in his prime. It's a team that on paper looks like you know, it's got a bunch of guys that are in their prime or maybe just past, in the case of Kiki. They've got a lot of offense. What they don't have is a lot of defensive rebounding, and I think this is kind of what came back to bite them. If you take a look at their rebounding splits, they were 24th in the league in terms of net rebounds. And so if you ask me how can the 76ers make a very quick turnaround, it's going to be by either getting a center that is a monster rebounder so that they can slide Perk down to the power forward spot, move Kiki to the small forward, or it's by getting a true power forward that they can plug in and let Perk continue to play center. I think it really is imperative on them to find a second big man. Brad Lowhouse is not it. He does not play like a big man. He's more a jump shooting perimeter guy. And so if they can get Kiki back down to his natural position of small forward, I think at that point they become a very, very dangerous team. Alternatively, you could get a guy who rebounds a ton from the small forward slot. That could be someone like Cedric Ceballos in this year's draft. The thing that really concerns me, though, is the 76ers are locked into this team from a salary standpoint. They've got Dumars on a max deal. They've got Kiki on a max deal. They've got Jay Humphries on a max deal. They've got Sam Perkins on a max deal. So good, you've locked your core in. The problem is the core has not been good enough to win, and you're not going to be able to get out from under those contracts for a couple of years. And I think one of the things that is an important skill to master as a GM is flexibility. You can afford to be trapped if you're, you know, in terms of contract situation where you've got a lot of guys that are making a lot of money. If you're a team like the Spurs, you know, you just won over 60 games, you're a heavy favorite to win it all. All of your guys are stars, they're in their prime, that's terrific. The problem is when you are a team like the 76ers and your contracts are locked in, but you're not doing well, you don't have the flexibility to pivot and go bring players in. You know, they've got the one draft pick to go get help, but after and the draft pick, especially as we've seen the last couple of years, these draft classes have players that are not ready to contribute right away. The draft pick is going to take a couple of years to come online, and normally you'd think, oh, we'll just, you know, trade the draft pick and get the player you want. The problem is you don't have the salary space to absorb a player without sending another core player out. So in the case of the 76ers, if I were to try to recommend, you know, what do I think you should do if you're Gary? Unfortunately, I think the recommendation would be to look at trading either Kiki Vandeweghe or Jay Humphries and trying to break that salary up for one big commit to a single player to something that's broken up across two or three or maybe four other players. Alternatively, and I would not recommend this, but it's something I could see as something you might want to try to do, it would be a possibility to try to flip that that high draft pick for three or four low draft picks to bolster your depth on the back end. And then in 2 to 3 seasons, once the big contracts start falling off the books, you've got the depth. You've still got a couple guys in the tail end of their prime. At that point, you start a chase for another quality contributor. But I really do think, those are really the paths forward for the 76ers. They need to find a rebounder. They need to find a rebounder on the cheap. And they may need to move one of their big guns in order to do that. Just because they're not really going to be able to bring someone in who's ready to help now through the draft, unless they get really fortunate, I guess I would say. Finally, in the Atlantic, we'll look at the Hornets. They're in much better shape in terms of record and talent than a lot of the other teams here. They've got Vlade Divac, who they did a good job, I think, holding on to. I thought it was interesting watching how far Vlade fell in the draft. And I will go back to, why do I like Vlade? It's kind of the same reason that I liked Joakim Noah and why I traditionally like players that are skilled in non-standard areas. And that is, if you look at Vlade, he doesn't look dominating. He's got a C in his inside. His offensive and defensive rebounds and post defenses are B's. Perimeter defense is B, blocks a B. But he's got a B in steals, which is very odd for a big man. So he's going to be able to help you get extra possessions. He might be someone that you might look at and consider running a half trap defense, where your goal is to force the other team into bad passes and pick off steals. I also like the fact that although he's not there now, he's got C potentials in handles and passing. So he's going to give you not full point guard skills, but let's just say he'll be able to give you a little more of a motion offense skill in a couple years when he gets there. So while Vlade doesn't do anything well, he does have skills that are not normal for a big man, and that maybe let you get away with drafting a guard who's a little weak in a traditional guard area. He's got Hersey Hawkins, who I think is a little bit undersized as a small forward where he's currently cast. But if you're able to get him into a shooting guard position, that becomes less of a problem. He's also got Spud Webb, who's on a big contract. I don't like Spud at his contract number, even though generally I do like Spud. He's a good defender. He gets you steals. He's hyper quick, has nice athleticism. Is not amazing with handles and passing, but is good enough, especially when you consider his age, and is a scorer. In fact, if you look at Spud this season, he averaged 16.3 points a game, and he's got A potentials in inside, jump shot, handles, passing, so he's likely to improve again next year. So I think Nick has done well to lock down his point guard position of the future, his center position of the future. I know, again, Hersey Hawkins is playing at small forward this year, but I think he probably should be a shooting guard. And you have to think that Nick is going to swing a trade or make an offseason signing to get another player in there, because this is another thing I really like about the Hornets. They have Jay Vincent under contract at $1.5 million next year, which, given his productivity, he averaged 20 and 8 this season. That's fine. I really like them using Jay Vincent as a small forward or even a power forward in a pinch. He's certainly the near-term future, but there's no long-term lock-in with him. And then they're going to have a ton of cap space this season to chase free agents. They're going to drive up the price on restricted free agents, and they're going to make it so that anybody who's not paying attention is likely to lose their unrestricted free agents. So look for the Hornets to be big game hunting in free agency this year. And if it doesn't work out for them, their only big contracts are to their key core pieces and their core young pieces. So I really like what they've done there. They're kind of the opposite of the 76ers. The 76ers are locked in with guys that are in their prime or leaving their prime. They're on long contracts. They don't have the ability to bring in guys. The Hornets are the opposite. The only players that are really under contract with them are their young key pieces, And that lets them go out and trade for a distressed contract. It lets them sign guys in free agency. So I think the Hornets are in really good shape. Next up is the Hawks. The Hawks are a team that I think is starting to move in an interesting direction. And I'll talk about that, you know, in a minute here. But first, I want to point out that the Hawks are kind of between the where I would say the Hornets and the 76ers are, in that they have some big contracts that I'm not sure they should have retained into next year, but those will be expiring contracts next year. They fall off the books. It gives them a depth of talent this year and next year, mostly next year, because this year's over, that they're going to be able to take advantage of. But then when you look down the road into 1991, the only players on their books are Cliff Robinson, Glenn Rice, and Sherman Douglas. And you figure Reggie Miller will be an RFA. They're probably going to bring him back. But, you know, I'm okay with paying Cliff Robinson that kind of money because he's averaging 22 and 10, basically, or 23 and 10. So he's giving you what you would need at your power forward spot. And yes, he's at a little bigger number than maybe you want, but I never have a problem paying a short-term contract to a player who is producing. And Cliff Robinson is nothing if not producing. So what intrigues me about where I kind of see, or I hope, I don't see them going this way, I hope they're going this way. I'm kind of hoping to see the Hawks be one of the first teams that really leans hard into three-point shooting. Unfortunately for them this season as a team, they only shot 31% from the line, the three-point line. But they have the makings of a scary three-point team. Glenn Rice should be a great three-point shooter. Reggie Miller should be a great three-point shooter. Sherman Douglas is not going to be a great three-point shooter, but he's another guy that has, you know, has the ability to run an offense. Is a little more offensive-minded maybe than I'd like, but he can shoot long twos. So maybe you try to get the ball out of his hands and over to Reggie Miller and Glenn Rice. I don't know. They've got Bill Laimbeer, who is nominally a good three-point shooter, but when you take a look at his volume, it just it hasn't been there. And I think that's the thing that I would be looking at if I were the Hawks is, how do I improve my three-point volume from my best three-point shooters? You know, Glenn Rice was their number one shooter this year, and he's going to get better. You know, he only shot 42% from the field this season, 33% from three. Reggie Miller is a guy that I just look at and I think, you know, he should be a better three-point threat than he is, but he only took 144 this season and shot him at 31% clip. And given his three-point shot skill, you would think that would come at a higher level. And so you wonder, is part of this because they don't have the bigs inside to force teams to leave Miller alone and get him open shots, or because Sherman Douglas hasn't been doing enough to get him open by drives and kicks? I'm not sure, but it's clear that, you know, the Glenn Rice, Reggie Miller, Sherman Douglas troika is the future in Atlanta, and I think that's probably a good thing. You know, again, I kind of wish that they didn't have as much salary tied up, but even if they can't be threats in free agency, they can still find ways to mix and match salaries on the trade market and maybe get some folks in that way. But I really think, you know, they're trying to kind of set everything up for next season. You know, trading and then going into next offseason, maybe going after players to fill out their front court. This particular draft, there's not a ton in the front court, but maybe they get lucky and jump up. And I'm sure they wouldn't mind having Gary Payton back there either. I don't think anybody would. Finally, we've got the Pacers, and the Pacers were an interesting case to me. It looked like they were trying to do a slow build, and then in the offseason, as we were getting ready to to start the season. They started making moves, and that continued throughout the season. And now I'm not entirely sure what they're doing. They've got Thurl Bailey and Jeff Ruland, whom they brought in this season. These are both solid offensive contributors, but they're also fairly substantial contracts. And, you know, again, I'm not sure that you want to be locking yourselves into big contracts when you are a team that isn't competing. Larry Nance was an acquisition that averaged 20 points a game for him, only played 33 games, though. And he's another big contract, and he's an older player. And if you're a team that's not winning, you probably don't want to have a lot of older players on your squad. Armand Gilliam is, you know, a guy. He's got some nice offensive potential, maybe helps you a little bit on the boards. But he's a very, I don't know. I would like to see him get more minutes because his first two seasons in Indiana, he averaged a little over 20 minutes a game. He averaged 11 points per game in those seasons. And I think, you know, now that he's reached 25, he's going to be 26 next season. I think he's going to have some seasoning and some maturity. And I think he probably could, if given starters minutes, give you 15, 16 points a game, which I think would be fine, maybe from a small forward spot. You got Michael Cage, who is an amazing rebounder. This is a guy that maybe, you know, some of these teams that we talked about before that really need rebounding. You know, Cage's contract is not super expensive. You could probably find some value out of him. And it's clear that given the ages on the 70s, or on the 70s, on the Pacers rather, I don't think they're going to be ready to compete. They're probably in need of figuring out where they're going and giving their guys time to be seasoned. The Adrian Dantley signing this offseason was interesting. He nearly led the team in scoring off the bench. He's probably not going to be back. This is just me, you know, recklessly speculating here, but I really think the Pacers would like to start getting younger and get on the Drazen Petrovic, Steve Kerr, Muggsy Bogues timeline. They've got all of the, you know, they've got a lot of pieces. You know, I think, you know, Gilliam's a nice piece at 25, Petrovic, Muggsy Bogues, Steve Kerr. You know, you'd like them to be a little younger so you have more time to grow with them, but if not, that's okay. I just, I hate to say it, I really did not like the Thurl Bailey pickup. And the reason I didn't is, it probably comes from me having had Thurl for a couple of seasons. I think Chad was able to draw out of him his best while he was in Kansas City. He was also at his athletic peak. That was his 27 and 28-year-old seasons. And, you know, he averaged 27 points a game that first season for Chad, and then 20 points. And now he's down to 13. And you just got to wonder, you know, was his productivity a product of being featured on a Kansas City team that wasn't quite ready to compete his first year? And, you know, we talk a lot about empty calories and how does that look in the league. And I wonder if Thurl is a player that looks like empty calories. You know, he averaged almost 20 points a game with Portland when Portland was having a hard time trying to find offense, and, you know, pre-Kevin McHale days. And then, you know, moved on to Kansas City as a restricted free agent. You know, I don't know who gets as much out of Thurl as Chad does. Chad is an amazing game planner, and if Chad is able to squeeze stuff out of guys, generally I don't think, you know, unless you've seen them put up numbers somewhere else, it's not as good. And maybe it's because his minutes are down. You know, as I look a little closer, he got about 50% of his minutes shaved off and lost about 50% of his scoring. But then the question is, why trade for Thurl and that contract if you're not going to give him a chance to perform? And I do have to question that. The Larry Nance deal, I think, is one that will be attractive as a trade chip. I think the Jeff Ruhland deal could be attractive as a trade chip. Even Thurl Bailey's contract next season will probably be fine because it's expiring. I think what it's going to wind up doing is it's going to wind up keeping the Pacers from being able to be as big a player in free agency as they would like, unless and until they move one of their big contracts. But I wouldn't put it past them to do it. And quite frankly, I think, you know, they probably should consider trying to move off one of those big contracts to their older bigs, be it Nance or Ruhland or Bailey, to get younger. And, you know, the other thing that will be interesting to see is how do they get to utilize their pick in the draft? You know, right now they're sitting in the seventh spot. It's possible somebody could jump them and push them back a little bit. It's possible they could jump. But right now they're going to have, you know, several not great but passable big men to select from. Do they like any of those? Do they want to trade out? Do they want to trade up? I think this is a draft where I don't want to go too far into a draft preview. I'd like to save that for another episode of Chat with a Cat. But I do think this is a draft where you could see a little bit of movement from teams that really want to get up into the top spots, mostly because I think obviously the number one pick is going to be Gary Payton, but I think there are, you know, several players afterward where each player has strengths and weaknesses, and there's no player that I think every team is going to love. And if a team doesn't have anybody that they love on the board, that's when they have an opportunity to trade out to somebody that does love that player and is willing to overlook you know, those weaknesses that that player may have. So there's my kind of first look at the teams in the Eastern Conference that did not make the playoffs. I'll probably do another one for the Western Conference. You know, I've got the opportunity maybe to do one for the playoff teams at some point. In fact, now that I think about it, since we already know who's out of the playoffs, at least as far as the conference finals, you know what? I'm going to do a couple more. Let's move on to the Cavaliers. The Cavaliers, you know, squeaked in. I won't say squeaked in. They were a very solid sixth seed. And this is a team that is, it's transitioning. They mostly got players in their prime, maybe a little past their prime. The Cavaliers, if I were to give my honest opinion of what I think of when I think of the Cavaliers management, is it's a team that has a tendency to hold on to its players one or two seasons too long and then trade them away when they no longer have the same trade value they once had. And I guess that's good for loyalty, and it's good that, you know, they don't want to trade away productive players. But what I think it does make it difficult to do is it makes it a little bit difficult to you know, reload and come back and continue to operate at a high level. I'm very curious with their young core. They've done a good job of starting to stockpile young pieces for the next iteration. They've got Horace Grant at the power forward, who's 24. They've got Del Curry at 25, Vernon Maxwell 24, Mookie Blaylock 23. Even Michael Adams at 27 isn't out of his prime yet. But one of the things you'll notice about all these players except Ho Grant is these guys are backcourt players, they're perimeter players, they don't have beef to pound down low. I'm curious to see how soon they're ready to move on from Michael Adams and into Mookie Blaylock. And when that happens, are they able to move Michael Adams to get size? You know, I think Adams, he's an interesting case in that he's a scoring point guard. He averaged 20 and 10 this year. And, you know, he's a little bit undersized, but he's the best perimeter defender, frankly, in the league right now with a score of 98 and a steal of 100. So he's a marvelous two-way player. And I think the Cavaliers would do well to hang on to him probably for about two more seasons. And the reason I say two more seasons is because at that point, you know, in two seasons, he'll be nearing the end of his contract. He'll be 29, so his prime will be nearing its end. But more importantly, it gives them two seasons to let Mookie Blaylock, who is super, super raw, grow into himself. And at that point, you know, hopefully Mookie is able to take the reins as the premier defensive terror point guard in the league. I think Michael Adams has been very underrated just because the Cavaliers aren't putting up eye-popping win totals, but he really is, I think, the engine that makes this team go. It's certainly not been their bigs. You know, Rick Mahorn seems ageless, but he's not dominant. He's just, you know, he's okay. You know, Del Curry is okay. Sleepy Floyd is a little less than okay. They started Don Collins and David Greenwood this year, who are both okay. Horace Grant is okay. You know, you've got a lot of guys that are okay, and Michael Adams dragged them to the playoffs. So let's give Michael a little bit of love if we could. But I do think the next move for the Cavaliers has got to be reinforcing their front court. The thing that worries me about them is that this offseason, most of their team comes off the books. They're probably going to have to pay Del Curry, and that is likely to eat up most of their cap. And if they decide they want to bring Sleepy Floyd back, which if I were bringing Floyd back, I'd almost try to bring him back in a sign and trade. He's currently a better perimeter defender than is Blaylock, but a worse perimeter defender than Adams. He's a player that can score, he can handle the ball, but you've already got Adams doing that, and using Floyd next to Adams didn't seem to work this season. And so I think he's a player that probably has more value to other teams than he has to the Cavaliers. So the Cavaliers figuring out a way to sign and trade him is very important. But they're going to have to hope that after they're forced to pay Del Curry, they're able to get another signing, preferably of a big, that is going to let them staunch the problems that they have in their front court. Because if you take a look at, you know, how they performed this season, you know, this was a team that was in the middle of the pack when it comes to rebounds, maybe a little behind the middle of the pack when it comes to defensive rebounds, and didn't have almost anything in the way of block shots. They finished 17th in the league, and in differential they were 23rd. Probably a lot of that comes from playing the Bucks a whole bunch, because the Bucks love to swat shots, so do the Celtics. But those are the things that they need. They need rebounding and they need block shots, which are traditional big man categories. So to me, that's the Cavaliers' assignment in the offseason, is find a way to bolster their front court. You know, Mahorn is going to get a little bit older. David Greenwood, I don't know that he's the answer. Don Collins put in work, but he's 31. He's a journeyman. They need to find a star in the front court, and I don't know how they do that at this point. We'll next talk about the Pistons. I think the Pistons felt like they had a really disappointing season this year. They pushed really nicely last year. This year they kind of fell flat and then fizzled out in the playoffs. And I know the Pistons have put up on the trade block, hey, everybody's available. Very disappointed with the way the season ended. I don't know if I were the Pistons that I would necessarily hit the blow it all up button. But the thing that concerns me if I'm the Pistons is my entire roster, with the exception of Purvis Ellison, whom I traded for this season, is 27 and older, meaning they're all in or slightly past their primes. And this is a team that seems to have peaked at 50 wins. So I do think it's probably worth, I don't want to say blow the whole thing up, but I do think there is some redundancy here. You have two guys that are amazing one-dimensional scorers in Ricky Pierce and Jeff Malone. And I think you can probably find a way to flip one of those guys for more of a defensive presence at the backcourt spots. I think you know, in general, I like the composition of their team, except the age worries me because they're going to start sliding and their productivity is going to start falling off. And so, you know, if they want to bring Jeff Malone back, they're going to have to pay him. If they want to bring Rob Williams back, they're going to have to pay him. And so just bringing back your team as it's presently constituted pretty much eats away your cap space. So to me, the ideal thing to do this offseason would be to find a home for Albert Robertson or Ricky Pierce. If Alvin Robertson or Ricky Pierce can bring you back a little more beef up front, you know, Terry Cummings is doing an okay job. Playing at the power forward spot, but I do think at this point he would be a little more effective as a small forward, simply because his post defense is currently sitting at a 60, and you can only imagine that it's going to start declining. And so anything that he gets offensively, he's probably going to give up defensively against power forwards. Against a small forward, he might be able to get a little more out of his you know, natural height. So I don't think it's time to panic in Pistons land, but I do think, you know, Alvin Robertson, Ricky Pierce, and Jeff Malone are all kind of redundant with each other, and finding a way to move one or two of those guys to get some extra help in the front court would be very much something that would be helpful. The Chicago Bulls, this is a team that they're always making moves, and quite frankly, they're always grabbing guys that I want. It's kind of annoying. But I do think they have a very interesting team, you know, in terms of they've been filling the gaps with older players, you know, like a Randy Brewer or an Eddie A. Johnson. They've kind of been built around Eddie, but I think this is the season where they might be ready to pivot. You know, I think, you know, Pooh Richardson, Derek Harper, Gerald Wilkins, Scottie Pippen is a nice backcourt and wing set. John Konkak isn't great, but between Konkak and Polonese and Tarpley, you can probably start Polonese and Tarpley as your bigs, and Konkak is at least a passable backup. He's not being paid like a backup, kind of like real life. Konkak got a huge contract, and he got a huge one here. You know, this is a team that is probably going to have to get a little more expensive with re-upping Roy Tarpley in free agency. I think they'll still have the ability to make a move or two. It'll be very curious to see whether or not they want to bring back Eddie A. Johnson or try to find a sign and trade for him. I think figuring out a sign and trade would be my top priority, simply because I think, you know, you've gotten about as far as you can with Eddie Johnson, and it's probably time to turn things over to Scottie Pippen. He does not have Johnson's offensive game yet, but defensively he already looks scary. And after another offseason, he's probably going to be even better. I think it's time to pivot off of Eddie Johnson, who is an all offense and, you know, some but not a lot of defensive player, and maybe try going the other route and building around Pippen, who is all defense with a slightly stronger offense than average. But, you know, at least to me, you've got Scottie Pippen, you've got Derek Harper, who's a good defender. Pooh Richardson is not great yet, but, you know, shows signs of being a good defender. I won't say great. Gerald Wilkins is a good defender. You know, Pippen, as I already mentioned, great defender. I think what you really need to do if you are the Bulls is try to find one or two strong interior defenders. You know, Polonese is okay. He's a great rebounder. Tarpley is good, also a great rebounder. You're kind of stuck with Konkak, unfortunately, but if you can find another guy who can come in and either, you know, back up your bigs, back up... Am I going to say this? I think I'm going to say it. Terry Tyler might be the kind of guy you want to go get. Well, he's getting up there in age, maybe a proto-Terry Tyler. But a guy that can guard both big and little. I think for me, if I'm the Bulls, that's the player that I think might be able to put me over the hump. And I would just lean into a defensive identity at this point. And, you know, maybe I can sign and trade Eddie A. Johnson to get that. I don't know. And then the last team that has been bounced from the playoffs in the East at this point is the Nets. They frankly had a much stronger season than I thought they would have. I think part of it is they stayed healthy. I think part of it is most of their players had really nice training camps. What would be my recommendation for the Nets? I think, they've got a team where a lot of their key players are just leaving their prime or just coming into their prime. I think it's a team that you look at the Celtics, you see, how you matched up with them. And, unfortunately, the way that you, matched up with the Celtics in the division and the way that you matched up with the Bucks in the playoffs, just, it seems like it wasn't enough size. Do you try to put points into Anthony Mason to get him to grow quicker? Do you try to trade something to get the size? I mean, I don't know. I really like the team as presently constituted. I think you've got to try to get a little more depth, get a little around the edges, and maybe that's enough to get you over the hump. The Nets are in really good shape in just about every way, except for, they don't have their own draft pick, but that's fine. When you're a 59-win team, your own draft pick is not going to get you anything, at least not anything of consequence. And, when I look at their contract situation, they're going to be slightly under the cap next year. They are probably going to have to figure out a way to bring back Clark Kellogg because, he was a key piece for them, averaging, 21 and what is that, 9? I think, they would be sore-pressed to replace that productivity. But if they're willing to go over the cap, they should easily be able to re-sign him. Let me check. Does he have bird rights? That's something I just realized I should check. 7 bird years. Yeah, so they could go over the cap to re-sign him. And, it's a core where I think you'll see a couple of players getting better in the offseason due to training camp. You'll see a couple people getting worse. But this is, it's a well-balanced team. And I think there's really not a lot of criticism I have for the Nets. Maybe the other thing you look at doing is figuring out who you can throw a paid trading at to make yourself just a little bit better. For the Nets, I don't have much to recommend. Keep on keeping on. Make sure you find a way to bring Clark Kellogg back, or if you don't have some sort of trade or free agent signing in the hopper that makes you a little better, which is fine. I'm looking at my timing here. It looks like we're at 53 minutes. So you know what? I may as well just go through and take a look at the Bucks and the Celtics and finish off the East. That way I can have one pod for the East, one for the West. That'll make it a little easier rather than splitting them up so much. So let's go to the Bucks, who are the number 2 seed as we go into the conference finals. It's very difficult for me to say I have a lot of ideas for the Bucks because the Bucks have been really, really good pretty much since the league started. They have more league titles than everybody else. Quailman has the most wins of anybody in the league. So there's really not a lot for me to say in terms of recommending to him, oh, here's what you do. But I think there are a couple of observations that I would like to make generally about his team that maybe other teams might be able to use in terms of figuring out how do I get the kind of success that Doug has had. And the first thing I would point out is if you look at the calling card for the Bucks for the last few seasons, it's been exceptional interior play with multiple players blocking a ton of shots. If you look at his current set of bigs, Alton Lister has a blocks rating of 100, Benoit Benjamin, 92, Antoine Carr, 100. Even his small forward, Jerome Kersey, has a 70. Ron Harper has a 50. Doc Rivers has a 41. So every single player on his team is an exceptional shot blocker for their position. the thing that, if I'm a Bucks fan, I'm worried about is not that Quayle is going to have an excellent team. It's that this team is going to probably have to lose someone in the offseason or pay a ridiculous amount of tax. Because going into the offseason, Ron Harper is up for RFA. Jeff Hornacek is up for RFA. Alton Lister is up for UFA. And as we all know, keeping a guy in UFA almost always means overpaying him. And I think Ron Harper and Jeff Hornacek, both being purple potential players, are going to command max deals. So, you know, Doug is looking at probably another 50 to 80% of the salary cap and salaries just to keep his team together. And Doug has proven that he is very adept at flipping guys at just the right time. So I'm not saying I'm worried about this. And Doug was, for those that noticed, shopping Lister, probably in hopes of getting cheaper and getting younger, and not having to make that tough decision of, if I have to hand out three max contracts this offseason, can I even afford to do it? So if there was a time to try to pry a player away from him, it's probably going to be Lister, and it's probably going to be an unrestricted free agency. I don't see him letting go of Harper and Hornacek. But, you know, the Bucks, they have decided they are going to terrorize teams with block shots. And I suspect, and again, I have no way of proving this, but I would think that having a lot of guys with high block shots also helps lower your opponent's field goal percentage, not just from the blocks, but from the intimidation factor. And if you look at their field goal percentage allowed this year, they allowed 43% from the field, which is number one in the league. And I suspect if you go back and look, they've been close to number one in the league by a long shot for several years. So, you know, Doug has figured out block shots are, you know, if that's the way, going back to my very first pod, you know, if you want to build your team specializing around something, block shots is a proven way to win games if you're specializing in something. And it's one of the things that, you know, I could do an even deeper dive on, but just real quick, I will point out that not every stat is equal. For example, you know, obviously scoring tends to correlate fairly strongly with winning. Points allowed, if you're high on that, you tend to be one of the best teams in the league. But not every single stat always correlates to winning. And I don't want to go through and point everything out, but I would suggest that you take the time to look at the stats and ask, you know, the teams that are winning, what do they do well? And teams that are losing, are the teams that are losing that do certain things well? Because if they're doing it well and they're still losing, you know, maybe that's not the best thing to specialize in. And the other thing to look at is, what is the differential? We talked in another pod about possessions and probabilities and stuff. And, you know, I would say as an example, take a look at the team leaderboards for steals and blocks. Every block is not a possession for you, but it's a spoiled possession for the other team. Whereas every steal is an extra possession for you, and it's a spoiled possession for the other team. So if you look at the steals, the Celtics lead the league with an average of 10.8. The median teams, the Trailblazers and Suns, average 8.9 and 8.4. And the worst team is the Jazz at 6.6. The difference between the best and the worst is 4 per game. And the average teams are about halfway between that. But if you look at blocks, the best teams are the Bucks and the Celtics at 10.3 and 9.1. And the worst teams are the Nuggets and Sixers at 4 and 3.5. Similarly, you look at the median, the Kings and Lakers are 5.8 and 5.2. So that discrepancy, 10 to 4, is huge. And the other thing to take a look at is the steals kind of come down nicely. You've got 10 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 9 8 8 8 8 8 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 7 6. Blocks, it's 10 9 7 6 6 6 6 6 6 5 5 4. So there's a huge discrepancy between the Bucks and the Celtics and everybody else. And what that tells you with the success of the Bucks and the Celtics this year winning their divisions is blocks are something that if you can become very good at, can give you substantial advantage over the rest of the league. You know, the Bucks and Celtics, compared to the rest of the league, are averaging almost double the blocks, whereas with the steals, you're only averaging 20% more. So, you know, look and see where are your margins biggest, and maybe figure out how to focus on that. And finally, I'm going to talk about the Celtics. I do not think we have been talking about the Celtics enough this season. Everybody has been focused on the Spurs, and I think rightly so. But the Celtics, and I mentioned this in one of the town halls, didn't give up when the Spurs got Magic. They made trades. They brought in Craig Elo. They basically bulked up and said, we are going to try to chase here. And the Celtics have been right on the Spurs' heels all year, and at the very end, they surpassed them. And they will have home court if they meet in the finals. And I can see a Celtics championship. They're going to have to get by the Bucks, which is no small feat. They're going to have to get by probably the Spurs. Spoiler alert, I don't think the Trailblazers have enough to beat the Spurs. We beat them twice in the regular season, but once was when Jordan was injured, so that one doesn't really count. And they've done a good job of smacking us around most of the year. But anyway, getting that off my chest, if I look at the Celtics, you know, it's a team that is built, they're locked into all of their key pieces in terms of salary, but they're an almost 70 win team. You would like to, you know, you probably want that team to come back next season. They're still going to be scary. After that, they're going to have to pay everybody, and they're going to have to figure things out. But at least for this year and next year, I really like where the Celtics sit. They're probably going to be the favorites in the East. And they have as good a shot as anybody at picking up a title. And, you know, they're also built around younger pieces. Hakeem is 27, Terry Porter, 27, Mark Jackson, 25. So their core guys are still young. I mean, even their older players, and I'm using air quotes here, which you can't see on the pod, which is great. You know, Peterson and Elo, 28. Ralph Sampson, 29. Trent Tucker's 30, but you know they don't rely really on Trent Tucker. So I think the Celtics are set up for another couple of years of domination, and then we'll see you know, what they're able to do in 91, whether they decide to blow it all up and try to go back into the draft to chase stars again like they did with Olajuwon, or whether they decide to try to run it back and continue to crush the league. I think they're well positioned to do both. So there you have it. There's a review of the Eastern Conference as it sits going into the conference finals. I'll try and get one of these in for the West. But that's it for this episode of Chat with a Cat, and we will see you next time. Thank you and good night.